Hey, what's up? Get down. Welcome to the program. I am suffering from allergies. I don't know why. I spent most of my life perfectly fine. Then I got a little bit older and all of a sudden it was like, okay, give him allergies. The guy hasn't had it for his whole life. He's been pretty much okay. Now that he's like, you know, getting a little bit older, let's give him allergies. Give him something to deal with, huh? Well, I was watching the weather yesterday, and they said the pollen count on everything is through the roof. They have a little chart on the TV. If it's like little green, then there's a little bit of pollen. If it's a darker green, then there's more pollen than there was with the lighter green. Then it gets yellow, and that's, caution, you could be suffering from allergies today. There's a lot of pollen. Then it gets orange. The next level up is orange. And it's like, oh, people with allergies, you're not going to like this. And then it's red. And that's like death by allergies. Well, the forecast for today is red. That means you'll be allergic to everything. Now, I'm already allergic to all kinds of people. That's why I don't spend a lot of time with them. I'm sniffing as we speak. I'm allergic to, I think, trees, grass, houses, people, cars, buses, trains, breathing, food and breathing, drinking, the sky. I'm allergic to almost everything, apparently. So today's the red zone. So what I've done is I went to Costco and bought 97 boxes of tissues. I figure I'll probably go through all of them today. And blowing my nose doesn't help. I mean, not to be disgusting about it, but it really goes nowhere. What people have to understand is that once you blow your nose, 10 seconds later, it's blowable again. I don't know where this stuff comes from. My body is apparently extremely efficient when it comes to producing saliva and phlegm. My body is like on top of this stuff. Too bad I can't bottle it. I'd be a millionaire. Well, I don't think anybody would buy it, but if they did, I'd be a millionaire. So it's going to be a suffrage day. Now, I know that a lot of you suffer from allergies on various levels from various things. Today's going to be a orange or a red day for you, depending on where you live. Some of my listeners live in Phoenix, Arizona, in which case, of course, you have no pollen because you have no trees. Everything there is made of sand, and it's too hot for pollen to survive. It's almost too hot for people to survive. Pollen, no. Pollen says, nah, it's too hot. I'm not going to infiltrate the air and blow around today. It's way too hot. And there are no real trees. They're cactus, apparently. I've never been to Phoenix, so I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I've seen pictures of it. And apparently they're a cactus, which is a fascinating plant. It's I guess cactus is the house plant in Arizona. I don't understand it. If you touch it, you prick your finger and you bleed. It's not pretty. It looks like a group of penises coming out of the ground. It's kind of like the ugliest thing in the world. And then on a windy day, I guess you'll get the tumbling tumbleweed, which is also a very attractive idea. Was that a guy jogging down the street? No, it's a tumbleweed. I don't even know what a tumbleweed is. I think it's a bunch of weeds that become disconnected from the ground, and when the wind kicks up, it's like bowling for dollars. I really don't know what tumbleweeds are. I don't. They're in all the westerns for some reason. All of a sudden, a tumbleweed will just come rolling down the street. I don't know. That's why I don't live out there. I don't understand it. So allergies, not good today. You'd be very, very careful. Wear a heavy coat. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's start the show since I haven't started it yet.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
They are getting a bit weird, yes.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Yes, indeed.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, right. Whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. In case you clicked on something by mistake, maybe you thought you were on the internet, and you're going to find out about how to grow tomatoes on your windowsill, then you clicked wrong. You got me instead. I will tell you how to grow tomatoes on your windowsill. Get some tomato paste, put it in a box, and let it ferment outside your window, and eventually you'll have worms and slugs, and so that won't work. Go to one of those Home Depot Lowe's places and buy some tomato seeds, man, and put them in some dirt in a box right outside your window, and before you know it, you'll have seeds in a box in dirt outside your window. Did you know that they actually sell tomatoes in supermarkets? You don't have to grow your own tomatoes? I know. Who knew? So people get so involved in vegetable gardens. It's organic, Ron. It's not sprayed with anything. Yeah, I know. That's why you got little animals inside your fruit. Of course it's not sprayed with anything. Spray it! Well, Ron, when you spray pesticides and insecticides on fruit and vegetables, you're actually consuming them. Wash it off. I don't know what to tell you, man. It's better than growing it yourself. I used to have a little vegetable garden. Yeah, I did. I know. And I cry at the end of Lifetime movies as well. I've got a sensitive side. I've grown vegetables before. 3/4 of the crop you got to throw out because there's little holes in it where worms or some bugs have like drilled into the fruit or the vegetable. I ain't eating that crap. And then they say that, oh, fresh vegetables taste so great. No, not really. Not really, no. And then you got to bend down to pick the vegetables. That's a lot of work for me. So, and you got to buy a hoe. I've dated them, but I've never bought a hoe garden tool. Why would I do something like that? They have them in the stores. Not the hose, the vegetables. Anyway, man, I'm still suffering from these allergies. And I don't do allergy medication. I can't do allergy medication. I mean, I could, but I will not do it. I'd rather suffer throughout the day and see what's happening here as I'm speaking to you is my eyes are tearing up like I'm very, very sad, but I'm not very, very sad. I'm sad that there's so much pollen around. That's about it. It looks like I'm crying. My eyes are all red. which is also the color level of the pollen today. It's red, which means danger. Danger, Will Robinson, pollen. Anyway, how are you? Later on in the show today, we're going to talk medical. We're going to talk about strokes and high blood pressure. Oh, Ron, what an entertaining program this sounds like it will be. No, you know, there's a good segment of the population, like probably a third of the country. I'm making up my own numbers. I have no idea. But it sounds good for this introduction. But there's a good chunk of the country that has high blood pressure and doesn't even know it. And the rest of you have high blood pressure and you know it. So that's like everybody. No, it's true. If someone says to me, Ron, you know, I have low blood pressure, I go, oh, well, okay. I guess you have to worry about it on the other side. I don't know. I have no idea. You can have high blood pressure from stress, or maybe it's a medical thing. It's a cultural thing. It could have been in your family. They passed it down to you. I mean, it would have rather that they passed down some type of valuable antique rather than blood pressure and genetic diseases. But, you know, still, it's passed on with love. And, of course, that can lead to stroke. So I thought we'd talk about the two things. It's probably National Stroke Month. I really don't know. Every disease has its own month, you know. That's true. Every disease has its own month. It's National Stroke Week. I don't know if it is. Why not? Why wouldn't it be? I don't know who. I guess Trump sits behind a desk and starts signing decrees, like, because he's king. You know, he's king. No, he fired the FBI director, Comey. Did you know that? Yeah. Yeah, he thinks he's back on The Apprentice. He's just firing people now. And that has sparked, even amongst Republicans, demanding to investigate Trump's ties with Russia. Business ties, political ties, selling his ties, manufacturing his ties, all that crap. I don't think most people trust this guy anymore. 30% of the country did, or 33% think he's doing a good job. Maybe it's up to 40 or something. But I think it's dipping again. I don't know. But let's get him the hell out of here. I mean, seriously, man. Originally, on Election Day, I made a prediction. I was also very distressed and very distraught. But I made a prediction, and I said by August, at which I mean August 1st, I suppose. I don't really know what I meant. But by August, what I meant was by late summer, that this Trump dude would be in impeachment hearings. Not that he would have been impeached by August, but he'll be in hearings to be impeached. They will find that either he's done something uproariously awful, illegal, or his asshole level just went off the charts and nobody can stand him anymore and they just want him out of there. Or he actually lied about things and has business ties with Russia. And I think that's a very big possibility. They haven't been able to prove it yet. However, if you piss off enough people, those people will eventually get back at you. And the rate at which Donald Trump pisses people off, there's just no way the man can remain in office. I want the day to come when someone says to Donald Trump, you're fired. I want him to feel that embarrassment that he's given to other people in his business career and his television career, quote unquote, with his famous line, you're fired. I want it to happen to him because I think what goes around really should come around. And if there's anybody that's got stuff coming around, it's got to be him. California, specifically Los Angeles, but California is in the news because they are calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump. The reason that they are calling for impeachment, which is fantastic in my estimation, The reason they're calling for impeachment is they believe that Trump has violated many times since he's been president, which hasn't been that long. Seems like forever, but it hasn't been that long. But they are citing that a lot of the things that he's doing by executive order benefit him. He still owns companies. He may not be running them, but he owns many businesses. And he does things that embetter his own situation and the situation of his company. So they're investigating that too. He's going to get it from all sides. And I tell you, Mr. Trump, your arrogance, your egotistical ways, your desire to be a dictator and king at the same time shall come back at you. That's my prediction. I stick to it. Let's see what happens. People say, Ron, if Trump is impeached, then Pence becomes president. At this point, I don't care. I take the groundhog from Philadelphia or Punxsutawney Phil, whatever that groundhog, make him president. I don't give a crap anymore. Get this maligning little bitch out of that office. Fire him. As you can probably tell, if you've listened to the program, I don't really care for Mr. Trump. I never did, and God knows I never will. It's an embarrassment. I spend every day of my life rubbing my eyes, not because of the allergies, rubbing my eyes saying, was this a dream or a nightmare? Can I wake up now? And apparently I'm still in this nightmare, and I can't get out of it, no matter how much I blow my nose. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is, what it is, it is what it is, it is, it is. You think I'm grumpy? Do you? I think so too.
Yes, of course you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on. Isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Do you find yourself feeling depressed? Hopeless? Having trouble sleeping? Struggling with frequent panic attacks? Irritability? Constant arguments with family?
I know Dad did too. I know that.
Friends? Or even friends of friends on Facebook? Yelling at your phone or computer screen?
Unbelievable.
And the constant urge to pull out your hair? If any of these sound familiar, you may be suffering from TIAD, or Trump-induced anxiety disorder. Impeachara may help. Impeachara is a prescription medication that may alleviate many symptoms of TIAD. Impeachara works on your brain's neurotransmitters and optical receptors, convincing you that Donald Trump has already been impeached. Not all patients have the same reactions, and results may vary.
Okay.
Side effects may include elation, the ability to focus on work and family again, and reconnecting with people you called ignorant fuckfaces on social media.
Boom.
Women that are pregnant or nursing should ask their doctor, as well as their state legislators, if they are allowed to take this medicine. Impeachara is not approved for children or adolescents under voting age and should not be taken by those in favor of the current administration, for it may cause thoughts of suicide or spontaneous bowel movements. In rare cases, people have developed a skin condition known as Cheeto face. Tell your doctor right away if you have thoughts of comb-overs or experience a reduction in the size of your hands. Before you decrease or stop taking Impeachara, make sure you have disabled instant news alerts on all of your mobile devices.
Things got pretty dark there for a while, but thanks to Impeachara, I've elected to be happy. Nice shot.
Talk to your doctor to see if Impeachara might be right for you.
Go again.
Also, Do it fairly soon before you lose your health insurance.
All right, we're going to, well, that's one medical condition that I have, but I don't want to take the medication for it. However, there are other things that we have to be concerned about, as you all know. One of them is blood pressure. It's debilitating. Well, not really, but you should really know if you have high blood pressure because you really need to get that stuff under control. So let's speak, let's talk, let's figure this out. Hello, Dr. Lawrence. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Lawrence is an interventional cardiologist for Midwest Heart and Vascular Specialists in Kansas City. And we're talking about the importance of knowing your high blood pressure. Why is that important, doctor?
Well, what we know is that as the blood pressure increases, the risk of complications from high blood pressure increases. Mm-hmm. We know that once the blood pressure is greater than 120 over 80 consistently, we begin to see increases in the rate of heart failure, stroke, kidney disease, mm-hmm. heart attacks. We define high blood pressure as a blood pressure being greater than 140 over 90, mm-hmm. Because that's the point at which we really begin to see increases in these and these complications.
What do those two numbers mean? To my layman's knowledge, the lower number seems quite significant. To be honest, the higher number, and I know there's a word for it, systolic or whatever, what role do these two numbers play?
Well, as you can imagine conceptually, when the heart contracts, mm-hmm. it creates a pressure, and that pressure is transmitted to the arteries of the body.
Yeah.
So the pressure that you see at peak contraction of the heart is the so-called systolic blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a top number, and the trough, the lower number, is the number that occurs when the heart relaxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the so-called diastolic blood pressure. They are both predictive of complications related to heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to target the top number more in our treatment. And we know that once that maintaining the blood pressure less than 140 over 90
mm-hmm.
in most populations will lead to a lower risk of complications from hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to make much of a blood pressure change to begin to see these benefits.
Okay. And hypertension isn't really necessarily being nervous or going through a lot of stress all the time. I mean, basically, isn't it more hereditary and more of a composition of your body?
It's certainly the composition of your body. There a lot of the so-called familial trends in high blood pressure have less to do with genetics and more to do with lifestyle.
Yeah.
We sometimes historically tend to take on the lifestyle of our parents. Sometimes
yeah.
that's manifested as cigarette smoking. Sometimes that's manifested as a poor diet, poor mm-hmm. exercise, and all of those things can lead to the development of hypertension. And we try to focus on those things that are modifiable. Choosing our parents is not something we have the ability
right.
to do.
Right.
But we'll focus on those things that we can impact, and that's key to the management of high right. blood pressure when it's identified.
Wouldn't most people know what their blood pressure is by virtue of going to a doctor annually anyway? Because that's one of the that's the first thing that any medical facility does is go for the blood pressure. So shouldn't most people be aware of what their blood pressure is? Yet I understand through the American Heart Association that there are so many that don't know.
Well, and in point of fact, that's absolutely true. One would expect that, but not everybody goes to their doctor once a year. And that's why 85 million Americans have high blood pressure. That's why 1 in 2 African Americans have mm-hmm. high blood pressure. I mean, 1 in 3 Americans overall have high blood pressure, and they don't. And many of them don't know. And it's also important to know your numbers because sometimes as many as half the people who are actively being treated for high blood pressure mm-hmm. don't have their blood pressure controlled. So you cannot yeah. rely yeah. upon your healthcare provider or just the fact that you go to a healthcare provider to mm-hmm. believe that your blood pressure is not elevated, or that even though you're on medications, it may not be controlled. So it's important, this concept of check, change, and control is empowering to the individual. You need to check your blood pressure. You need to know what your blood pressure is, even if you have hypertension, and even if you are seeing a doctor regularly, you need to know your numbers so you can begin to make changes in your life that will lead to control.
Confidentially, although there are a lot of people listening, but confidentially, aren't a lot of blood pressure monitors that you buy from the pharmacies, they're not always all that accurate necessarily. And those machines that you stick your arm into, I don't know how many machines there are in pharmacies anymore, but those were notoriously inaccurate.
I wouldn't say that. I'm not sure that that's the case.
Uh-huh.
Blood pressure will certainly the circumstances under which you check your blood pressure can impact your blood pressure. Uh-huh. I mean, there is a specific protocol that we use to make certain that we don't overestimate the severity of our blood pressure, and that it's sometimes hard to achieve that in a noisy pharmacy. I mean, nice. Ideally, blood pressure is checked after sitting for 5 minutes in a quiet spot, with the right size blood pressure cup.
Okay,
so it's sometimes not the machine itself that's inaccurate, but the blood pressure cup may not be the right size.
Right.
The environment in which that blood pressure is checked might not be ideal. That's why we are strong advocates for people being empowered to follow these things themselves, even at home and in a home monitoring program. So I think everyone who has high blood pressure should have an automatic blood pressure cuff at home.
Well, I think I'm going to guess, and I am no doctor, quite obviously, but I'm going to guess that half America has blood pressure concerns. If they're not being treated, they should be. I believe that's the case. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it's certainly rampant. Are medications becoming more body-friendly than they have been? There are always reports about medications that cause side effects, but yet that's worth it in order to control your medical situation. Where are we with that?
Well, all medications have side effects, and what we're talking about is risk versus benefit.
Correct.
The good news about the medical treatment of high blood pressure is that we have lots of medications from which to choose. And so if you have a side effect from one medication, then there's another medication that you can go to typically that'll bring your blood pressure under control. And we have these combination pills, which allow you to take fewer pills.
Right.
And more blood pressure medicines are taken once a day. So that's so there are a lot of things that we can do to minimize the side effects and to increase the benefits of blood pressure management through medications. But we also want to emphasize that some of these lifestyle changes are incredibly important, because it's not just taking medications alone that make a difference.
Right.
And the degree to which you can lower your blood pressure through lifestyle changes, then that allows you to take fewer medications, and it allows you to avoid the really minimal risk from these medications.
Right. What are the three C's that you refer to?
Check, change, and control. And the first step in the management of high blood pressure is awareness. And awareness comes through actually having your blood pressure checked or checking your blood pressure yourself. And once you know that you have high blood pressure, the next thing you need to do is to change. And that's change what you do, to change how you live. Eat less salt. Exercise more regularly.
Mm-hmm.
To lose weight, even a small change in weight, 5 to 10 pounds, can lead to significant changes in blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then once those things happen, we can begin to control. We can begin to take control of our health, our heart health, our brain health.
Mm-hmm.
But the first step is check. The next step is change. And through that, we can get control.
Yeah. And of course, the message is for everything, but especially for this, see your doctor on a regular basis, at least annually. at any
see your age. Doctor and use resources. I mean, the American Heart Association has invested a tremendous amount of time, and we have a website, heart.org/HBP, heart.org/HBP. That's a tremendous resource for our patients and for our communities. Take advantage of it. It's very user-friendly, our goal is as World Hypertension Day approaches May 17th, we want 5 million people to check their blood pressure. We think through that, we can make a big impact on heart health and on brain health.
Well, we're out of time, but that's a ton of information. Dr. Willie Lawrence, thank you so much for your time today.
But great. Thank you so much. Pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Dr. Babak Jaromi joins us now. He's a co-director of the Comprehensive Stroke Center at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. And we're talking about stroke. It's an awareness conversation. I think we all know what stroke is, but we're probably not aware of how frequent it is and how to stay on top of these things. How serious is the stroke amongst the leaders of problems medically?
Stroke's a big issue. It's the number 5 cause of death in the United States. Right. It affects about 800,000 patients every year, so that's one every 40 seconds. I do wish that more folks actually knew the warning signs of stroke, but if you ask, more than 1/3 of Americans won't know the warning signs.
So many of the warning signs, and we'll go through what they are, but so many of these signs are also typical of other things, and I think it confuses us. For example, gas, as silly as that sounds, can sometimes mimic chest pain, etc. It becomes difficult. Well, what are the symptoms, and do other things indeed mimic these symptoms?
There are many mimickers of stroke, but if your audience memorizes a simple acronym, FAST, that stands for fast,
yes,
they'll catch the vast majority of stroke. So F stands for facial droop, A stands for arm weakness, uh-huh, S stands for speech difficulty, and T is to remind us that time is of the essence and to call 911.
Okay.
So if you've got one of those, your face is drooping, your arm is weak, or you've got difficulty talking or understanding speech, call 911, you won't fail.
Do these symptoms come on like instantaneously, or is it something that progresses over the day?
Both can happen, and unfortunately, when things progress, a lot of our patients will sort of try to shake it off or not call 911, and that leads to key lost time. Sometimes these symptoms may come along and then go away, the so-called transient ischemic attack, which, while great, unfortunately is a warning sign that there could be a really big stroke that doesn't go away in the near horizon. So the key message is to never brush off the warning signs, be it immediate or slowly progressive. Okay.
I guess the real clue for most of us, what you listed in the symptoms, would be a drooping of the face and an inability to speak clearly. That would be, for me, that would be a panic time.
You'd also want to think of any weakness in the arms or legs, and sometimes that can happen
symptoms. Yeah, there can be quite a few different things. Okay, what are there certain types of people that get strokes more than others, certain age groups, certain people that do certain activities, etc.?
So as we age, the risk of stroke does increase, women actually have a higher risk of stroke than men. Very true. Huh. If our parents have had a stroke, that also means our risk of stroke is higher. Now, these are things we can't change, but there are risk factors we can modify. In fact, we estimate that more than 80% of strokes are preventable. So addressing things such as high blood pressure, quitting smoking, making sure we're screened for and treated for diabetes and high cholesterol, and losing weight, having good diet and physical activity can go a very long way to preventing stroke.
So only a small percentage of the population are okay. That's what you're probably saying. Okay. All right. I mean, my doctor always tells me to exercise. I mean, I kind of thought that was something that they had to say. But does indeed exercise, is it really? Because sometimes when I exercise, I'm exhausting myself. I'm feeling dizzy. I'm feeling like I'm really like overdoing my body. But that's good for me?
Well, you should have a good physical trainer help you out, but believe it or not, moderate to vigorous physical exercise has been shown to reduce risk of ischemic stroke by 35%.
Wow.
That's not a small number.
That's a huge number. That's a huge number. Okay. Once you do get treated for stroke, I have some friends that had strokes and they're pretty much okay now. Some of these are indeed treatable. It is quite common for a person to have a mild stroke, I would say, at a certain age. It's possible.
Having strokes are common. So about 800,000 patients in the U.S. alone will have a stroke every year. That's one every 40 seconds. Oh. All of us will know someone
who
had a stroke may have had a stroke ourselves.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not always minor.
If anything,
stroke is the number one preventable cause of disability.
Uh-huh.
So emphasis is on prevention and, of course, early recognition of those signs to get to the hospital. The faster you call 911, the faster is your chance of a near complete recovery.
Okay. Are there any misconceptions about stroke?
There are, and I see a lot of these in my own patients who are caught off guard by stroke. They think that it's a rare disease. It's not. Uh-huh. They think that's a disease of the elderly. It's not. A third of strokes happen in patients under age 65. That's you and me or our colleague at work.
Uh-huh.
So I think recognition that this is a more common issue is the key message to spread.
Gotcha. Where do we go for more information, doctor?
I'd encourage your visitors, your listeners, to go to stroke.nm.org. That's Northwestern Memorial's website, and I'll provide your listeners with a ton of great information on stroke recognition and prevention.
Perfect. Dr. Jerome, thank you so much for your time. Very important. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Oof. Well, it's scary stuff. It's always interesting when they talk about the frequency of a disease like stroke. They say, well, there are, you know, like this many Americans that have a stroke every year. That relates to one stroke, to a stroke every 40 seconds. And I'm thinking, that's kind of misleading. It's every 40 seconds somebody has a stroke. So it's like, I have to wait until the other guy finishes his stroke. Gotta wait 40 seconds. Because it's one every 40 seconds. We can't have two. You got to wait till the 40 seconds is up from the other guy. Now you can have yours. So this is an odd way of putting it. It's like, I'm not laughing at it. I'm just finding its oddity in that type of explanation. Anyway, thank you to both doctors today for doing it. You know, Ron, what kind of show are you? You start the show off as a comedy, then you get into your little political diatribe, and then you get serious with a lifestyle doctor. What are you, Ron? Well, let me answer that question very simply. I'm suffering from allergies, okay? Ugh, don't get down on me. Leave me alone. I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.